Welcome back to another episode of It's About Time. I'm Nate.
I'm Josh.
How you doing, Josh?
Well, and yourself? Oh, happy Labor Day to everyone.
Yeah, happy Labor Day. It is hot. 97 degrees when I got here.
That week of like 78 degrees and low humidity was really nice.
It was. It's September. Like, how many more weeks of this do we have?
Oh, probably another month.
Oh, God.
At least.
I hate this time of year. I mean, I love this time of year because you've got baseball still going on, football getting ready to start. Playoff baseball is a month away, even though the Nats won't be in it. I love this time of year. I'm ready for fall where I can sit out, smoke a cigar in front of my fire pit, set up my outdoor projector, watch a game outside, any of that kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to that. Noticed a few of you did follow us on Twitter. Just a reminder, we do have a Twitter handle. It's About Time DC1, ITS, no apostrophe, About Time DC1. So give us a follow. Let us know what you think of the episodes. I got a quick story I wanted to share with Josh before we started. I brought Josh some smoked brisket today, and my smoker is an electric smoker, and I'm not going to name the brand because I don't want to. They might have, you know, maybe one day they could be an advertiser on the podcast. I don't know, but anyway, lately I've been having two problems with it. One, it's been tripping the circuit, and two, it's been electrocuting me every time I touch it. Which, you know, is not ideal. You have to wear rubber gloves to open it and shut it and to touch the racks that are on the inside. So I decided Saturday I'm going to just gut the thing and try to figure out what's wrong with it. I looked at some YouTube videos. One of the things was the heating element, which is like a coil that they get at the bottom of your oven. You take a blowtorch to it to clean it off. And I did that. And I did some research. I'm like, why is this thing electrocuting me? And it was a ground wire problem. And you're like, is it with the smoker or whatever? And they said, one of the tips was look at the extension cord you're using to determine that ground wire is not broken. And I said, well, where's the ground wire on an extension cord? And I never knew, I don't know if you did, and this is when you're going to realize Nate's an idiot. I never knew if you have a three-prong extension cord, the prong on the bottom is the ground. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never knew that. So mine was broken. It had broken off. So I was using it, and it was electrifying the entire smoker.
So you were using a three-pronged outlet.
With two.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so the prong on the extension cord is broken. So every time I touch it, I would like grip it, and I just start shaking. So that fixed that problem. I bought a new extension cord. It was an old extension cord. It was my dad's. But the rest of it, tripping the GFI outlet and all that kind of stuff, I think I fixed it. It worked. It didn't set my house on fire. The brisket was delicious. But that just, I'm an idiot. It really shows how big of an idiot I am.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting move.
Electrifying yourself?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good way to start the day, right?
I mean, it woke me up. I didn't need coffee.
No.
Yeah. And the whole thing's metal, with the exception of a few plastic parts on the outside. The whole thing is metal. So you can't touch it without electrocuting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good news is if we ever play golf, you're probably most likely to get electrocuted.
I am. I think it's a Darwin Award winner. Have you ever heard of the Darwin Award?
Yeah, definitely. Darwin. I think once it happens once to you, it'll, you know, you're more likely to get electrocuted.
Is that true?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know. You could be pulling facts out of your ass. I don't know. Anyway, let's jump into why we're actually here, which is to talk about sports. We're going to talk about, obviously, the Nationals and the demise of their season. And there's, 26 games left, something around there? Who cares? And they're bringing some people up. They traded some people this week, so we'll talk about that. But we're going to talk a lot, and we're going to start with the Redskins. We'll start with the preseason game, which, did you watch?
I did.
Yeah.
I was actually more interested in watching the Browns game.
Oh, yeah? Just,
well, Hard Knocks.
Oh, yeah.
Kajus! Okay. Just fun to say. And they cut both of them.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. I think I drafted one of them on my fantasy team.
It's going to be a good year.
Yeah. Awesome. Redskins lost 13-20. Hogan played the whole game, I think.
Who's now Denver Bronco.
He's now Denver Bronco. He's picked up on waivers by the Broncos, which then they got rid of
Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, the end of the quote-unquote Paxton Lynch era in Denver. It's interesting. I think he looked okay. I didn't think he looked good enough to claim on waivers. I don't know how you felt about that.
I felt the same, but everybody gave him rave reviews in that last game. So
he has a strong arm. It looked like he was making good decisions. Again, really hard game to watch. I know for those guys on the field, I saw a lot of posts online about this. For these guys, a lot of these guys, this is their Super Bowl. This is their chance to make an NFL roster for the only time in their life. I get that. But as somebody who is a fan, it was just really hard to watch.
It is. I mean, that's the problem, right? You're trying to market a product that is subpar at best, that really, again, the only people that it matters to are the people that aren't going to be there in a week. Like, I guess it's interesting from that standpoint to see the roster battles, but how much can you get out of a guy like, you know, you have a quarterback that can't throw the ball. What are you going to see from a receiver? Like, you have an offensive line that can't block for a running back. What are you going to see as explosiveness? You know, so there's, if you have defensive backs and you're not pressuring the quarterback, eventually they're going to get open. Is that on the, like, I'm not sure how good of game film you actually get out of this.
I agree. I think the only notable part of the game, aside from the fact that RG3 didn't play, which I was kind of looking forward to. I don't know why. I wanted to see what he looked like. But the only notable part of the game was the running back competition. It was to see what Kelly and Perine would do. Kelly looked good, whatever that means. Perine put the ball on the ground once, which I honestly thought that would be his demise. But he made it, and Bibbs did not. Bibbs is now on the practice squad. I was surprised that Bibbs made it to the practice squad.
Yeah, I would say that. So two things out of that. I actually can't believe Capri Bibbs made it to the practice squad, because I feel like he could be a third back somewhere else and be a productive NFL player. The other thing is, I'm wondering if they don't have full confidence in AP, because you keep three running backs with pretty much all the same style.
Yeah, they kept five running backs total. And the expectation is that Byron Marshall is going to be placed on IR. So you're going to have four running backs, three of which are really first and second down backs, and then only one, Chris Thompson. I thought that they would keep, like you're saying, keep Bibbs, because he's would basically, you'd have a backup for AP, and I thought that would be Kelly. He had earned that right. And then you'd have Bibbs, who's a backup for Thompson. I was a little shocked. And they got lucky that Bibbs is on the practice squad. Who knows if he lasts all year there, though, because guys, their teams can come and poach them anytime they want. So
right, and it's just going to take one injury to a running back.
Yeah. The thing about AP is interesting. He got into a little scrap this week. Did you see that with Chris Carter and Shannon Sharp? I like the fire that he has.
He's out to prove stuff. That's good. It's never a bad thing when someone's got a chip on their shoulder.
No, he really thinks that he can lead the league in rushing again.
Ha.
Chris Carter said that he played for Miami his last season. He caught five passes or something like that, and then he retired. Something along the lines. And Chris Carter said this week, Adrian better get over himself. We were all great, but at the end, we all smell like a baby's diaper. It's a little harsh. I don't think Adrian smells like a baby's diaper yet, do you?
No, I mean, it's probably 2 years away.
Yeah. He smells like a wet fart, maybe.
That's not good.
That's not good. Sorry. AP said in as a retort, a great O-line is what I'm looking forward to the most. I haven't had a line in a long time. New Orleans had a good line, but I really wasn't able to get much time down there, mainly because of Mark Ingram and then Kamara that came on. But this line is top-notch, something I haven't had since the beginning of my career. That's A, true, and B, a very strong statement from a guy who's only been here 2 weeks.
I think that, actually, you know what? Here's a good analogy. If you look at a guy like Alfred Morris, I think this scheme earned him those yards. Not a bad running back, but the scheme was built for him. They had tackles that could move and were mobile. And I think that what he's saying is, you know, he doesn't have to fight for the first 1 yard, 2 yard, 3 yards. His job's going to be after that. I mean, if you're clear 3 yards, and he showed that he's going to be hard to take down. You know, and I said, like I said, I think if they get 3.5, 4 yards out of him, you really can't complain. I mean, I know that's not what you're looking for out of a running back. You obviously want more yards. But if he can consistently not take negative yards, push the pile forward, they're going to be fine. And I mean, my thing is the offensive line going to stay healthy?
Well, Trent's always a question mark with that because of his style of play and just the wear and tear on his body. He's always playing with an injury, which is a problem. They're younger in the middle. I mean, Roulier's a young guy, and Quanjo's still relatively young. Sheriff's, third year in the league, right?
Yeah.
Relatively young. Moses isn't even really that old. I think he's in his sixth year. He's been a five-year pro in his sixth year. I think you're right, though. I think what AP is saying is, in Minnesota, and I'm going to reiterate a lot of what he said, but in Minnesota, I had to sometimes create my own holes. I had to get to the second level on my own. Whereas here, I may not have that burst or that ability, but I don't need that. I have the vision to see the holes, and sometimes it looks like Rob Kelly doesn't have that vision. It doesn't look like Samaje Perine has that vision. AP has that vision. He's going to find the hole, and then if he can, like you said, get to the second level, get 3-4 yards downfield, that's when he can still be somewhat special.
Yeah, I think in that first preseason game, you kind of saw flashes of it, and this is a really stupid statement, but it's like thinking fast, acting slow. Like, you see running backs that just are, I'm going in that hole. I don't care if there's not a hole, that's where I'm going. Where you could see he, you know, he gets the ball, and the play looks slow, and then all of a sudden he's through a hole. Like, I like that. Like, I think the veteran presence, the knowing the vision is going to help a lot. And again, I'm a homer. Like, I'm all in on AD, whatever we're calling him.
All day AP. How about that? All yeah. day AP.
That's annoying.
Again, and I'm going to preface this because you got on me last week when I inadvertently compared Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen to J.J. Watt. I am not comparing Adrian Peterson to Le'Veon Bell, but Bell does that. You know, a guy like Kelly or Perine, they run where the play takes, where it's designed to go. It's almost like Le'Veon Bell disappears behind his offensive line and he's peekaboo, looking out, ready to go, finds a hole and goes. And I'm not saying AP can do that, but I'm saying he will cut back when necessary. Audible's the wrong word, but he'll change the path of the play if it's dictated to him.
Yeah, and in no way am I comparing him to Barry Sanders at this point in his career. Obviously. But that is a very, like, you're right. It might be a sweep to the right. Next thing you know, the ball's getting reversed 50 yards across the field, and he's going up the left side, and then ends up on the right side. Like, you just have to have that vision.
Yeah, and he might get a ball, and it's supposed to go inside at the guard, and there's nothing there, and he can bounce it out. Right. Whereas, I feel like Kelly was a guy who was just going to keep ramming it into the line.
Yeah, and there's another problem, right? He's going to put his head down and run. You can't even put your head down and run anymore.
15-yard penalty.
Yep.
Yeah. So Jay came out this week during a presser, and he said he's kind of going to ease AP in, doesn't want to overdo it with him. 15 to 16 carries per game, he said. I read an article by Barry Zwilluga. He was talking about 33-year-old running backs and older. We talked about this last week with Rigo. In the last 50 years, there have been 590,000-yard seasons, and four of them have been done by a 33 or older, two of them by Rigo in 83 and 84, Franco Harris in 83, and then Frank Gore in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
How different the game is. Rigo in 83 and 84 had 702 carries in those 2 years at ages 34 and 35. The most in the last 2 years is Le'Veon Bell at 582. Huge difference in game. But then Zwilluga went on to say they don't really need 1,000 yards out of AP. Kind of what you said, 600, 700, 800 yards. So 33 and older running backs that have given 800 yards or more, and the list is a little bit longer, Rigo, Gore, Franco, but then Emmitt Smith, Larry Zonka, and Marcus Allen. The only caveat to that is Marcus Allen is the only of those, including Rigo, that had 4 yards per carry or more. So it's history is not in his favor at his age.
But you look at those names and you say he's more likely to do it than your generic Alfred Morris type running back, right? Like he's more likely to be the outlier.
He's in that group of players. I mean, every single one of those players, with the exception of Frank Gore, is currently in the Hall of Fame. Rigo, Franco, Emmett, and Zonka. And Gore will be in the Hall of Fame,
yep,
based on career numbers. And AP will be in the Hall of Fame. So he certainly has the pedigree. And it'll be interesting to see if they ramp him up. Will he start at 15 carries a game and get to 25? Or if he stays at 15.
My guess is it could be one of those things where, let's just say the first game, he goes out and he's at like 10 carries, 65 yards, something silly like that. Next thing you know, he's at 25 right. carries by the end of the game. I think there's no way Jay's going to come out and tell him the game plan. I mean, so that's I would assume that there's no chance that it's either going to be 10 carries or it's going to be a lot more. It's not going to be 15 to 16. That's such a specific number.
Yeah.
Like, why not just, oh, here's also the plays that we'll be running. It'll be two sweeps to the right. I think one inside run.
I think they were the first two numbers that popped into Jay's head. He's like, 25's too many, 10's too little. 15 to 16? That sounds right. 50 yep. to 16. No, I agree with you.
And then he's like, oh, I gotta play those lottery numbers later.
Yeah. It's amazing, though. I guess the story going into training camp was Alex Smith, but it was probably maybe even more Darius Geis. And then Geis went down, and they went out, and it felt like a Redskin move. They got the biggest name available, but he's also was probably the one with the most tread on the tires. And now it's the biggest story, just based on his name, which is interesting.
It is. But again, and we've said this multiple times on this podcast, it's not even a negative story. It's not annoying, like, just Debbie Downer Redskins news. I mean, that's currently focusing on the Nationals. Taking some of the sting out of that.
That's true. That's probably going to be my rant at the end of the podcast, too. But we'll get to that at that point. But yeah, it's... I feel good about the team. And we'll get to the projected matchup against Arizona. I think they're going to start 1-0. Arizona's not a very good football team.
So. I agree. And I think... I mean, they're basically favored, right? Home mm-hmm. team gets 3 points.
Yeah, they're plus one.
So they're yeah. basically in an even game.
Yep. Last thing I'll say about the preseason game before we go on to the roster moves and getting down to the 53. Bruce Allen was in the booth with Joe Theismann. Did you see that? Hear that? Oh, I did. I was actually tweeting about it from our account. I think Bruce Allen was drunk, and he clearly has no idea about roster construction. That's nowhere in his – it's not in his purview anymore. Because they were asking him generic questions. Who are you looking at in tonight's game? Who's on the bubble? And he's like, well, we've got a lot of young guys that we're looking at. It really generic political answers. And it just made me like, I hate Bruce Allen with the fire of 1,000 suns. I hate him. And he is, to me, an utterly useless part of that franchise. Other than, well, I think once he secures a stadium site, it's over.
I think, yes, I agree with you. I think that's what he wants to do. Like, I think that'll be his legacy, right? And he'll be fine. Like, I mean, he's like chairman of the board, right? Like, he's just a face. He's looking for the deals.
And he's a name.
Yeah, he's marketing. But it's all marketing.
Yeah, he's George Allen's son. And his legacy will be, he did improve the alumni relations with the team. They have the homecoming game every year now. And he brought a lot of people back into the fold. He got his dad's uniform back on the field, the gold pants and the burgundy shirts, which I like. A lot of people don't like the mustard yellow. I love them. It just looks Washington Redskins to me.
Hey, man, I'd bring back the, I can't even remember, I want to say 49 helmet with the dark, dark burgundy with the arrows on the side.
Yeah, the spear, almost yep. like an FSU helmet.
Yep.
Yeah. And that'll be, and then the stadium site, and that'll be his legacy, is because he was known for contracts. He's not really known as a talent evaluator, and the whole saga with McGlewin and everything. I don't want to get into negative stuff, but listening to him talk, I'm just really glad the preseason's over and we can get to awful announcers from real networks where I can turn them off and put, you know, Cooley on and listen to them. I'd rather do that.
Yeah, make sure that they wake up Sonny every once in a while.
Yeah, hey, Sonny.
Game's going on.
Take the SJ9 out of your mouth and start talking. So the roster moves we talked about, they kept 5 running backs, Bibbs to the practice squad, Marshall most likely to the IR. AP is going to be the starter with probably Kelly as his primary backup, and I would think P. Ryan might not even dress some games.
Agree.
Yeah. CT says he's ready for a full workload. I think that's a sign that he is, that they did not keep a second, third down running back type, as much as it is also a sign that maybe they're a little weary about AP's durability.
Yeah, I agree.
Cam Sims and Trey Quinn made it as the 5th and 6th wide receivers. I think Trey's going to see a lot of time in special teams. I think he's going to be your primary, at least punt returner, if not both kick returner and punt returner. He certainly earned a job. So did Cam Sims, actually. They both really earned a job, and I'm glad to see they got it over also-rans like Brian Quick.
Agree. I think that from a development standpoint, that those two were key. Quinn is very efficient. He's very, I would lean towards polished. runs very good routes, like not the most physically gifted player, but like clean, efficient routes, knows where to be, sees the field really well. Like I think he had that one 33-yard gain where he literally was like, catch, stop, and go. And Cam Sims looks like he could be a good pickup.
Yeah. I think, is it too much to say that Trey Quinn could be...
Jameson Crowder?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way I look at it.
Amendola.
Yep.
In that mold. Tight routes, not necessarily speed racers, but tight routes, solid hands, going to hold on to the football, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and put themselves in position to make catches.
Right.
They know how to use the limited amount of their body, especially on slants and stuff.
Yeah. I'm glad that they kept him. I think that he had a big fourth preseason game. Sims, I think, was a lock before the fourth preseason game just because of his athleticism. So I was glad to see them. Your boy, Mr. Sprinkle, made it as a third tight end. They're raving about him at camp. His athleticism, he's probably going to be he's the heir apparent to the Vernon Davis throne whenever Davis leaves. And no, I'm glad to see that they're keeping three tight ends because obviously you cannot count on Jordan Reed staying healthy. And you don't want to give a talent like that up, I don't think.
No. What's your over under on games Reed plays this year?
The first number that popped into my head was 9. I think 9 sounds about right.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, it's just...
What would be a full year out of him? Does he go for 1,000 yards if he's healthy all year?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. Because that's, what, 65, 70 yards a game? Yeah, I think so. It's about 65 yards a game. Yeah, definitely. I think he would. Alex Smith loves his tight ends. Kelce in Kansas City. He had Vern in San Francisco. He loves his tight ends. And as you could see from the two, three drives that he played in game two, every pass pretty much was to Vernon Davis. And it was probably because the receivers weren't getting open. But, yeah, I think he'd probably be 1,000 yards. I think it'd be 90 catches probably, 1,000 yards. Is that about right?
It's crazy.
But
yeah,
it's true.
Agree. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think they got to treat him almost like they treat AP. Limit the number of times he's on the field. You don't want to telegraph that when he's on the field it's a passing situation, but don't let him run block too much because that's going to be too much wear and tear on his body. You know, do a lot of two tight packages, kind of alternate him and Vernon Davis. Why not? And get Sprinkle in the game plan. Dress Sprinkle, have all three tight ends ready to go, I think.
Yeah, but I don't even really care if you telegraph it because if you have a package where you have three wide, him in, and Chris Thompson, good luck covering them all.
Yeah.
The only defense you're going to see is probably a dime. Nickel, you know that you're going to get a linebacker on Davis. On Chris Thompson. So there's your match. Like, I mean, I think you can telegraph it. Plus, if there's only four in the box, five in the box, hand the ball off.
Yeah.
Run a draw,
or run a
screen.
One of the options.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You can do a run pass,
inside give, and let him go.
Yep.
I think you're right. I think most average linebackers are not going to be able to cover Thompson. They're not going to be able to cover Reed. And they're probably not going to be able to... Vernon's still got speed. They're not going to be able to cover Vernon either. So I think you're right. You're going to see a lot of dime packages.
Right. And plus, if you're in zone instead of man, you're going to find soft spots.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have receivers that can work back or work in to those soft zones.
Yeah.
And Alex Smith is accurate enough and can throw people open that I wouldn't worry about telegraphing it.
I wouldn't mind a too tight set with Thompson. Too tight set, but you're in a shotgun and you do an RPO. Do a read pass option. And... you let Smith read it. You let him use his experience, and he reads it. I think that's a good idea. But yeah, I think you probably have to limit the number of times that Reed is on the field if you want him available in December. I think that's, you know, otherwise he'll be probably great September, October, and then he'll be beat up by Thanksgiving. I think that's probably fair to say.
Yeah, has he ever played in December? Maybe he's just a warm weather player.
He has. The year
I know.
No, yeah, I was gonna say he had a big touchdown in the division clinching game against Philly. But yes, he was hurt in the middle of that year. Warm weather guy. Yeah, okay. That's like Steven Strasburg. Steven Strasburg's a warm weather pitcher.
That's because it takes him three innings to warm up.
Yeah, not to digress, but yeah, so I think that looking at the projected starters, the offensive line has been the same through all of camp. You got Trent, Quanjo, Rouye, Sheriff, and Moses. Sheriff, whatever. Running backs, AP is your starter, but Chris Thompson's your third down back. You're back in most passing situations. Reed and Davis are your two tight ends. Doxson, Richardson, and Crowder are your wide receivers. And then the D-line looks like it's going to be Allen. Payne's going to be your nose tackle. And then Ioannidis, who did not play a snap in the preseason. So it'll be interesting to see if he can stay healthy because he got hurt last year. Your linebackers are going to be Preston Smith and Kerrigan on the outside. And then Mason Foster, Zach Brown in the middle. Brown, they're not really – he's still questionable for week one. I don't know what they expect to get out of him. Do you think he should play week one, or do you think maybe they should ease him in week two?
I think you can. I think you are have enough depth where you can let him sit week one.
I agree with that. I think, yeah, I definitely think that they can. And really, I mean, you do face one of the top running backs in the game week one.
That's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, for so many years, I've had so many nightmares of good running backs, like the shady McCoy years. Just like, is he going to go for 150 today?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is you just watch and they just pick up first down after first down and they wear your defensive front down. And I don't care how good your front seven is. If they are on the field for 40 minutes, they're not going to be effective. And if Alex Smith can't get into a rhythm, you're screwed.
Yeah, and it's the terrible thing about David Johnson is you can hold him to 70 yards running, but then you've probably given up 130 in receiving.
Right.
So when you stack that, that's scary. I'm not really worried about, however, 38-year-old Larry Fitzgerald. I'm not worried about Sam Bradford. David Johnson scares me.
David Johnson scares me, and it's certainly looking ahead to Arizona. Just to finish up the depth chart, your DBs are going to be Dunbar and Norman on the outside, and then Swearinger and Nicholson. It'd be nice to see if Nicholson can step up and actually become a full-time partner with Swearinger. I think the rest of them solid. I mean, I like Dunbar. Obviously, Norman's got the track record of being a very solid. He's not worth what he's paid, I don't think, but he's a very solid defensive back.
He's not worth what he's paid, but they had to pay him that much to help the defense when that deal was done.
Right, and to get him, because they weren't the only team going after him. It was one of those old Redskin things where he came into town and they were like, yeah, you're not leaving Ashburn. Right. We're gonna get the contract, you're not leaving Ashburn.
Now, question for you. Were you surprised about Spate?
Yeah, that was one of actually the notable cuts. I put three down there. Brian Quick was the first one. I thought that he might make it as a veteran fourth, fifth guy. Phil Taylor, I thought that they might leave him because he's healthy now, or quote-unquote healthy, as a guy that could back up Payne at the nose tackle position. But Martrell Spate, it's funny, Joe Theismann said during game four, Spate's one of those guys you're always saying his name. And yeah, we're saying his name. He's gone. I was surprised. I thought he was a lock to make the roster. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. If not on defense, I thought he could have contributed on special teams. He could have been like a Lorenzo Alexander.
Yeah, I think maybe the new kickoff rule probably might have affected that because you can't get a running start anymore. And most people kick the ball deep. The Redskins kick the ball deep as much as they can. So that for special teams is actually becoming more marginalized, I think, because all you really have, most kickoffs go out of the end zone or a touchback. And then the only thing you really have is punt return now.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're trying to just play with mitts.
Yeah, 75%, as you said, which was a really good thing. I like that. So looking ahead to Arizona, they play in 4:25 Sunday in Arizona. Skins are a 1-point underdog, which is essentially a pick 'em. And they are would neutral site, they would be a 2-point favorite, right?
That's yeah, it. Or three. Yeah, I mean, home field advantage is usually worth 3 points.
And they're expecting it to be kind of an average scoring game. 44 is the over-under. Tease that down.
Oh, yeah. I could see like a 27-20 game.
Yeah.
But then again, I guess I could see a 21-3 Redskins win.
Oh, there you go, buddy. I thought you were going to say a 9-7 win where the Redskins kicked 3 field goals.
We're not the Browns and the Bills.
The Redskins have opened a few seasons up like that. I remember, I think it was a Tampa Bay opener. They won 9-7.
The Jets game?
3-0.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't an opener, though. That was like in the middle of the season. That was the worst game I've ever been to.
Me too.
At RFK. Yeah, it was awful. Bradford gets the start at quarterback. David Johnson is back healthy at running back. I wanted to just see what the Vegas projections were on wins. Arizona's win projection is 5.5. That's the over-under for them. Redskins aren't much better. They're at 7. even the Arizona beat writers have this as a loss for them. I see the Redskins winning, not handily, but probably comfortably. I think they'll win by a touchdown. Sounds about right. 24-17, somewhere in that neighborhood. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to stick with my 21-3 score.
21. I like that.
And I'll apologize next week when I'm way off.
It'll be time for you to eat some crow. No?
No chance.
Okay. I do think there's the potential, as you stated last week, or might have been the week before, for AP to go off. Because I think he was a little upset at the Cardinals for not keeping him. And it might be one of those things. It's not his real team, his real team of the Vikings. But I think it could be a game where he goes, I'm going to show these guys what they could have had if they kept me. Now, they have, what, the second, third best running back in all of football? No, second probably, behind Bell. And so, obviously, they didn't need AP. They needed him last year when Johnson went down. But I think that it could be one of those things. And I think that Minuski's going to blitz the heck out of Bradford. I think he's going to – Bradford hasn't played in, what, a year and a half?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's already shell-shocked. Why not just – I mean, it could be a bad day for him.
When he's healthy, Bradford is a good quarterback manager, but he's never healthy. And he only continues to get work because he can manage – and he must be smart enough to pick an offense up quickly, and he's certainly going to usher in their new rookie. Was it Rosen?
Mm-hmm.
Josh Rosen? But, yeah, he's nothing special. And he's on the wrong side of his career. He's been injured so many times. The Redskins should blitz the ever-living hell out of him. Let Kerrigan and Preston Smith have a field day. I'd love to see Daron Payne blow up the middle of the offensive line a couple times. But really, the thing that scares me, we go back to it, is that David Johnson is the running one of the running backs that could win a football game for you.
Absolutely. Yep.
So,
I mean, it's going to be a miserable year for the Redskins. Saquon, Ezekiel.
Yeah, they see Saquon twice. They see Ezekiel twice.
I was praying the Browns would take him, the number one pick. I was like, please just get him out of the NFC East.
Let's do a real quick tangent on that. I agree with you. I didn't understand the Baker Mayfield pick at one. I think you could have gotten Baker at four if you really liked him, because they had the first and fourth pick, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't.
You should have gotten Barkley and then Mayfield, and you could have had your quarterback and your running back.
Right.
Because nobody's taking Baker. Who was two? The Jets? No, the Giants were two. They're not taking Baker Mayfield. And you think they would have?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That was such a bizarre. Like, I don't think ever. I think there was so much more going on than what everybody was saying. I think there was a lot of bad optics. And having watched Hard Knocks, and you know he's got his All the Way Up show or whatever, from what I've seen of each rookie, I'd take Mayfield first.
Now you would, definitely.
I'm saying, like, looking back. So that's what I'm wondering is, did NFL teams know that prior to the draft?
Yeah.
Like, did they get that sense that it was all a smokescreen? So it actually, they, like, but the problem is the Browns don't have a track record of doing things that are smart. So we can sit here and question whether or not there was that want of Baker Mayfield. Because I don't like, I mean, I think Barkley is going to go down as one of the best running backs to ever play the game. And out of the backfield, I mean, he could be Marshall Faulk. He's that athletic.
I think this year he could be Ezekiel Elliott in his rookie year.
Yeah.
I think he very easily could be.
Year after year after year.
Yeah, if he stays healthy.
That's
terrifying. He said hamstring problems. That moves us right into the NFC's preview. That worries me the most about the Giants, because if you look at it, they have their big three. I mean, Eli's, what, 38, 37, maybe even 39. But they just gave OBJ the giant contract. And then you have Saquon. And they rebuilt their offensive line. They got Nate Solder from the Patriots. They're your sleeper pick.
Yeah, and if Evan Ingram ever figures out how to play.
Yeah.
And that could be a Jordan Reed.
Yeah, and their defense is going to be solid.
Yeah.
Is solid. I mean, the Giants always have a solid defense. They worry me more than Dallas, not as much as Philly. It's funny, you talked about running backs in the NFC East with Zeke. And with Barkley, I don't think you can forget Jay Ajayi either. I mean, he's a good running back. And Philly knows how to run the football. The Giants, yeah, Giants worry me. Eli always finds a way to beat the Redskins, too. Philly looks like they're starting their season with Nick Foles. I think that's the smart thing to do. I think you'll probably see him the first few weeks of the season until Carson Wentz is ready. They're the favorites to win the division.
Now, if you were an Eagles fan, would you be in panic mode that the first team hasn't scored a touchdown, hasn't scored any points this year?
No.
Okay.
Because neither of the Redskins. Oh, the Redskins have scored points. They scored 3 points. The first 6 points. I think they scored a field goal. In their
but they moved the ball.
They did. They moved the ball. I think we talked about this last week. The preseason's so meaningless. Would it worry you that Foles really didn't look that good? And that maybe he just shot up last year and that was just his one shot, like a Joe Flacco?
No, I wouldn't be that worried. I mean, I think that he's just got that California mindset that he's like, whatever, man. Just go out and play, bro. It's the preseason. No one cares, man.
You just picture him carrying a surfboard, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like long, flowing hair.
Like Sunshine from the Remember the Titans?
Exactly.
That's your guy?
Yep.
Okay. So Philly, if you look at the odds to win the division, Philly's the overwhelming favorite. They're at minus 155. Dallas is second. Were you shocked by that? Because I think you thought that they'd be the worst team in the division this year.
Yeah, but that's every year. Every year, Dallas is...
It's name recognition.
Right. I read a good article the other day basically talking about how overrated Michigan football is every year. Which, again, here's another year.
Do you want to tell everybody the bet that you made Saturday night?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Well,
and the money that you sent me
we
Sunday
can't,
morning.
We can't be tarnishing my Oracle name.
That's right. That's right. That was a mistake. You were doing something else. You were busy.
Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, you know... It's like the Cowboys' name is worth 3 wins a year in preseason rankings. They're just, and again, this is me being a Redskins fan, hating on them, but, you know, the last time they won a Super Bowl was basically the last time Redskins won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was, what, 4 years later? 96?
Yeah. And they've, I mean, again, great fans that aren't from Texas, but that's a whole other story.
Here's an interesting question I have for you. It's not on our outline, but... For years growing up, I hated the Cowboys more than I hated any other team in the NFC East. They're almost at par now with the Eagles. The Giants are always last. I don't like the Giants, but I don't like hate them with a passion. I never, even though they've probably been the best team in the division over the last 15, 20 years, they have 2 Super Bowls, 3 Super Bowls in the last 20 years to show for it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, 2. I'm sorry. They lost to the Ravens, but they did win 2 against the Patriots. So in your mind, is Dallas still number 1 in hatred for you, or is Philly taking over?
Oh, no, it's always been Dallas. It's not even close, even when they tried to kill Santa Claus.
Well, you have some Philly or a Philly fan in your family.
Where I mean, he's not even.
He's an in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really care about Mike, do we?
Nah.
Yeah. So... Philly minus 155, Dallas plus 374, the Giants are plus 488, so 5-1 to win. Dallas is about 3.7-1 to win. The Skins are plus 760. I think that's also a name thing. The Redskins have been bad for so long that nobody gives them a chance. It's almost something where I kind of want to put a little action on it. At almost 8-1 to win a division, you know, throw $25 on it.
Yeah, I think it's a great position to be, right?
It is. Under the radar, we've talked about this a couple times in the last couple of weeks. They don't really have any big-name stars. There's no big drama. The biggest story is AP, but it's a positive story. I think things could change drastically in 3 or 4 weeks. You know, it could turn from optimism, what's going to happen, to is Jay on the hot seat? But then it could also turn, if they start 3-1, to how good can this team be? So, yeah, for the first time in... Since 2013, I'm legitimately excited. I'm looking forward to Sunday at 4:25, and I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah, so when they lose 38-7 and you have alcohol poisoning Sunday night.
I have to go to a family's friend's house, so I can't drink. I'll have alcohol poisoning the following day or when I get home. Because I have to, I'm going to record the game because I'm going to watch it, but I want to be able to actually really watch it, so I'll watch it when I get home.
Well, yeah, I mean, you try not to make a scene in front of in-laws, right? You don't want to throw a remote through a TV that's not yours.
And you don't want to drop F-bombs in front of people. And
it's a whole experience.
It is. No, I found that yesterday. It's like, oh, yeah, we're having a thing. And I said, the Redskins season opens on Sunday. Yeah, but the whole family's getting together. I was like, damn it. All right, I'll be there. What can I bring? We'll bring brisket. I was like, okay, yeah. I guess that's my staple now, brisket. So, continuing on with the Redskins news, the RFK news, which you didn't hear this week, or I guess you didn't. Did you hear it? Anything about? So, DC is investing over the course of the next, I think it's 10 years, $489 million into the RFK site to turn it into the parking lots into a sports and recreation hub. And they had a meeting. Muriel Bowser is the mayor of D.C., and she said to the Redskins, let's bring you home. She wants them back on the site. It appears that the name no longer matters to her or to the majority of the D.C. council. And Bowser went on to say all of our pro teams should be within the city limits. The Redskins, of course, are the only team that are not. They're out in Landover. And the deal that's being offered right now to the Redskins and to Dan Snyder is that the city provides the land for free on a long-term lease. They don't gift it to them, but they can use it for free on a long-term lease, and then the team would pay for the stadium. I don't know if Snyder's going to go for that because it's going to be a $1 billion stadium, probably. The other possible stadium sites, Maryland is offering the National Harbor, PG County, and Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, has said that we have a nice site out in Dulles. First question. How excited or not excited would you be if they built a stadium on the RFK site?
All in, shooting fireworks off. I think that's awesome.
Would we get tickets?
Absolutely.
I think we'd have to.
In a heartbeat.
That'd be the only thing right now that the Redskins could do that would make me want to consider getting season tickets again.
Yes. I would be very disinterested if they moved. I can't imagine the people of Loudoun County, with already all the traffic that's out there, would let that go through.
How big of a disaster would Dulles be?
Logistically, I mean, you've got three ways to get in there. It's too far away.
Their selling point, I'm sorry to interrupt you, their selling point is the Silver Line. But DC's got the Metro.
Right, and that Silver Line ride would be 2 hours from... I mean, it could be 2.5 hours from the end of the line, like Greenbelt, Landover, stuff like that. Like, why? No.
Imagine 50,000 people. I mean, not 50,000 people wouldn't take the Silver Line, but imagine 20,000 people taking the Silver Line in addition to regular traffic. It would be a shit show. It would be awful.
Yeah.
Conversely, in my opinion, how awful would National Harbor be? There's no public transportation there. And the Wilson Bridge would be a nightmare. 295 would be a nightmare. Like, it would just be... DC's the only logical thing.
Well, let's be honest, though. DC would be a nightmare, too.
It would
be like leaving a Nats game. Like, but then that's okay, because we tailgate for 4 hours afterwards, and then we just drive right up. So that sounds like a problem for people that just go to watch football.
But the Nats games aren't that bad. Once you get on a 395 or the 295, you're fine.
Yeah, that's
true.
As
long as it's not during rush hour.
Yeah.
So they're not hateful. Like, if I leave from my dad, and my dad is in Annandale, when we leave a Nats game from the car out, not from the stadium out, because we park at a very far away parking lot because it's cheap and there's easy access to 395. It's 30 minutes. I mean, that's not hateful. Landover is an hour. It used to be an hour 20. Even when we would tailgate for 2 hours after the game and wait for traffic to die down, it was still 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, it's... The team belongs there. I don't know if the city's going to kick in any financing for the stadium, but I think Snyder's going to be looking for some help because he wants to build the guy that they said that they brought in that designed the stadium. It's going to be over $1 billion.
But how much of that, if you're pledging $500 million to the site, there has to be money there for that stadium. You're not spending $500 million to what I would assume to take down RFK and the Armory. I assume the Armory goes too, right?
They haven't said that. I think it's what they're doing is they're revitalizing. They're using the parking lots and making them recreational sites. They're putting some fields in parking lot 7, I think. Don't count me on that.
I don't think that's a good idea. I like that parking.
I do too. I think what they're saying is that for years, those parking, it's just been a giant waste of space.
Absolutely.
And it's pretty prime space because you're just off of 295 and it's on the Anacostia River, that residents were starting to get upset.
I'm sorry. Not just prime space. Let's just rewind that. Did you say prime space on the Anacostia River?
Where Nats Park is now was not prime real estate. It is now. It was a dump.
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
And then they kicked everybody out and they built. Now down there, I mean, in 5 years, it's going to be remarkable what Nationals. It's going to look like Chinatown, where they built, what is it now, the Capital One Center?
It is Capital One, yeah. Okay. It's confusing.
Well, we went from MCI
to MCI Verizon. Yep.
We've gone through all the telecom companies.
Capital One's
a bank, sorry. All right, I stay corrected. I'd love to see them do it. I don't know. The deal that they're offering the Redskins is the same deal that they gave United. They gave United the land. United had to pay for the stadium. The city financed all of Nationals Park. They're actually going to make money on that. It turned into a really good investment for them. They're going to pay off the bonds early, all this stuff. I don't know if they're willing to gamble again. And with the Nationals, you use that stadium 81 times a year for baseball. You're going to use red, whatever they call it, 10 times a year.
Yeah, but then you have concerts. You have
20 times a year.
Exhibition games.
Yeah.
DC United is going to be able to play Barcelona at Audi Field. It would be better. You could do exhibition. You know, there's multiple uses for it.
Yeah. I mean, there are.
You could probably get a bowl here. A larger bowl. Not just the military bowl or whatever it is. That's played on like December 24th.
Yeah. I mean, if you dome it.
No.
If you dome it.
No.
You can get a Super Bowl.
Don't care.
I don't care. Dan Snyder cares. And I bet you Bowser cares. She'd love to have the Super Bowl. It'd be like a... I don't want a dome. Make it retractable and leave it open all the time.
Oh, yeah. Why not just have the turf that moves? Like, let's go all in here because we're like a fair weather city.
Well, Arizona has the turf that moves. It works out for them.
Yeah. We definitely have the same type of climate as Arizona.
Arizona's dead heat.
Yeah.
Well, we're going off the rails. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the Nationals. But I am looking forward to the Redskins. I'm looking forward to what they can do. And we'll see. Next time we talk, they will, in my opinion, be 1-0.
Hail.
All hail to the Redskins. All right, Joshua, let's talk about the Washington Nationals.
Who?
They're the baseball team. They play on South Capitol Street.
Sometimes. Occasionally they show up.
They're there physically. They're there. 68-69. Do I have to keep doing this? 8.5 back in the NL East. 8 games back in the wild card. Here's what happened this week. They went 2-1 against Philadelphia. I think they're single-handedly going to sink Philadelphia's playoff chances. But then they went 1-2 against Milwaukee. The big news this week, however, were the trades of Ryan Madsen and then the trade of really a franchise staple since 2012, Gio Gonzalez. Total trades of Madsen, Kinsler, Gio, Daniel Murphy, and Matt Adams will save the team in 2018 and 2019 a total of $13 million. Not a lot of money. And they're most likely not under the luxury tax. So the idea that we talked about last week with them potentially raising the compensation pick that they would get if Bryce Harper leaves, they most likely did not achieve that. But it's $13 million that they can use towards other people. Do you see... I mean, there was no reason to keep these guys, but really, should they have seen the writing on the wall at the trade deadline?
Yes. I mean, I think you know my answer there. They definitely should have seen the writing on the wall. $13 million to me, meaningless. That's not an amount that matters to me, especially for people that could have made a difference in your playoff race. They needed the moves needed to be done. I mean, you got to clear house anyway. You got to
But like you said last week, he just hasn't had a not a good year for him.
No, not a good year for him. And even it seems like the local sports writers are starting to. I read a couple Boswell articles this week. Boswell characterized Davey Martinez as, and this is a paraphrase, it's not exact, I didn't write the quote down, but he paraphrased Davey Martinez as a manager who's not yet making the right moves, who may one day get there, but he's certainly not there yet, or something along those lines. So Boswell's certainly not a fan of Davey Martinez, certainly blames a lot of what happened this year on Davey.
Yes.
This podcast has been all about killing Davey for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, let me gather my thoughts here on that. I guess the best way to sum it up is really the wrong person, the wrong time, right? He could be the right person for the right team, but he was not the right manager for not even, I would say, a division contender or World Series contender. It wasn't the right time to experiment with a first-time manager.
It wasn't. And they said this one thing, too. Dusty, they lost their 69th game yesterday. That's the most Dusty ever lost in one season. And again, you had your problems with Dusty. I was a huge Dusty fan. I don't think they should have fired him. But look at the team last year and look at the team this year. Who did they lose off of last year's team? They lost Adam Lind. They lost Jason Worth, who batted 223. And I think that's it. There's one other guy who was not really pivotal. Who did they add? Matt Adams and Mark Reynolds, who combined for 30-plus home runs in 400 at-bats when Zimmerman was out. Juan Soto's been a revelation. You had a full season of Kinsler, Madsen, and Doolittle, whereas Dusty only had... Remember the beginning of last year, the debacle of the bullpen, and how Dusty kept everybody together. So really, Davey Martinez is working with a much better team, and the results are significantly worse. Significantly worse. I know there are other factors, injuries, but Dusty had a lot of injuries. One fact that Dusty didn't have to deal with, the division is a lot better. They're not great. Philly and Atlanta are not great teams. They're good teams on the rise. But, yeah, it was certainly not the right decision. It's going to be interesting to see. That should be my catchphrase. It's going to be interesting to see if you obviously, I don't think you think he makes it.
No chance. I could, in a world where they had committed to rebuilding, acknowledge that they were going to lose Harper, lose and or not chase Harper, had gone all in on this kind of maybe a year pause, let's see what happens next year, but we're building for 2020, and said, fine, I'll give you another year to see what you do. I'm fine with that. But they seem to be dead set on this. We're going to win, and we're going to win now. Then no, he can't be the manager of this team. He's not going to pull the right strings.
What I didn't understand at the beginning of the year, or I should say, I guess it was last December, November, when they didn't give Dusty a new contract, you had a lot of guys, a lot of the big guys that were in their final year. Why rock the boat that much? Why not give him another year? Davey's not in that boat. The one guy who is Davey's biggest supporter is Bryce, and there's a very good chance he's not here next year. And it might just be a good thing. I said this, I believe, last week. I don't know if you come back from this. I don't know if you rebound with this team from this performance this year.
Correct. You know, it's that old saying, first impressions make lasting impressions. I think that he has no control over the players on this team. And if you're going to carry over players, even if you bring new players in, you're still going to have that influence of, I think he's meek. I think he doesn't protrude power. Having him have Rizzo come out and speak for him, I still see no point that he, and now he's coming out and saying, there was the quotes in the post saying, oh, we need to evaluate our young players Well, no shit.
You've been there for a month almost.
Yeah.
You've been there since the trade deadline.
Correct. And I mean, here's what... I actually love your idea. I love your idea of telling Zim, hey, get healthy for next year, move Harper to first, and play Robles. Or if you're really... If you're committed, which they're not because Rizzo's in charge, to not re-signing Harper, tell Harper, hey, man, enjoy the bench for the rest of the year. I'm just going to let Robles play.
Can't do that.
Obviously. Well, I know you can't.
You can't do that because future people that would work for the team, play for the team, would look at that and go, I don't know if I want to play for them if they're going to do that when they're... Because he's in a contract year. He wants to show what he can do.
Yeah, so let him play first base.
Well, no, I agree with that. You can't bench him for the rest of the
year. Okay. I know.
All right. Just checking, making sure that you're being... You're on the level here.
I'm never on the level.
Never on the level.
I hate... Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I can't stand watching him play center field.
He's not a center fielder.
Why is he out there?
He has to be because of... Soto can only play left, and Eaton's not... Doesn't have the step to play center anymore.
But Bryce does?
Bryce is probably more athletic now than... Well, he's definitely more athletic, but he's probably faster than Eaton is.
Eaton's a better outfielder.
Oh, 100%. But... They really don't have a center fielder. Eaton's no longer a center fielder because of his knee, his ankle. He might be next year, but next year it'll be most likely Robles. It's painful to watch him play center field. I mean, he's not even average. I mean, you and I looked up his defensive run save average, and it's like negative 16 this year somewhere in that neighborhood. It's bad.
But now, let me ask you a question there.
Okay.
I believe, if I remember correctly, this is his first negative defensive year.
Yeah, you noted that it was a decline. He's declined over the last 3 years.
Massive decline. I mean, not even small. Which one can attribute to having to man center field instead of right field, right? So there's going to be some... Because of those games in center field, you're obviously going to have more opportunities, more ground to cover. But I've never seen him take more plays off. I've never noticed it. And maybe it's because I'm watching more. But his lack of hustle is noticeable. And do you think it reflects in those numbers?
I do. I think it was noted during the broadcast like a week and a half ago when Bryce was really hot. He's cooled off a little bit, but he's still playing well. That he was starting to look like the old hair on fire Bryce Harper. The guy that was running into walls. The guy that was just run till you tag me, playing with reckless abandon, all of that stuff. I think that he has played cautiously over the last couple of years. And I think he's just been trying to get to his contract. That's my opinion. That's where I'm at. And it does look like lack of effort on some place. It certainly does. Rendon had a play a couple days ago that was, I don't know if you saw it. Ball behind him, hit off his glove. It was ruled a base hit, but he just jogged after it. And Moustakas was able to run home. That might be a clubhouse thing.
Absolutely.
Trey Turner not running out of the box.
But that's what it is, right? If you're a star, do you face repercussions?
Well, Trey got benched.
Correct. But when Bryce did it, he got a talking to.
Didn't get benched. Rendon didn't get benched either.
Correct. I mean, that's it's absurd.
It is.
That clubhouse has got to be... Oh, you're going to get me all fired up again. Davey just never set a tone.
Boswell wrote about this, and it was totally in line with what you've been saying. There's a massive void in leadership. And nobody could have, I guess you could have seen it. Losing both Dusty and Jason Worth, and nobody, Max steps in. Max is amazing. Love Max Scherzer.
Absolutely, but pitchers are a totally different kind.
They are. And Boswell wrote in his article, the Nats need 20 more people that are like Max and Eaton, and they don't have it.
No.
And he said 20 is probably an exaggeration, but 10 more would be nice.
You don't. It's that old George Allen saying, 53 men together cannot lose.
Right.
This team's not together. And that's, I think that's my biggest thing with Harper. I don't think you're ever going to get a team. The best team on paper doesn't always, and for the most part, never wins the World Series. So that contract, I mean, look at the New York Yankees. They're not going to win the World Series this year. They have a chance. Good team. But
they're the third best team. Maybe fourth best team.
Again, but
now they're probably the third best team behind Boston and Houston. Although Houston's really in a dogfight though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Yankees don't have the starting pitching. Although, if you listen to Brian Kenny, you don't need starting pitching. But I still don't subscribe to that. I think you can win a playoff game.
Yeah.
Bullpenning. I don't think you can win a seven-game series bullpenning.
Correct. But, I mean, to get back to the point is, I just don't think Bryce Harper gives... I don't think he's good for a clubhouse.
I had this conversation with my uncle last night. He's a big basketball fan. We talked about John Wall. We were talking about what Dwight Howard could do. And my uncle said a lot of what you said. They've been exciting to watch the last few years, but he thinks that they're at their ceiling with Wall.
Yes, I think. And I think it started to come out last year when Wall was hurt.
When Gortat spoke up.
Yep. And that team, again, I've said this before because I don't want people to jump all over me, all five listeners. Not a better team. They were more fun to watch. Just the ball movement. Like, they looked more like a team instead of John Wall and the Wizards. Bradley Beal is never going to slot in as that, as the player, which is fine. But, like, John Wall, John Wall is another person where I think he's a Bryce. Like, is he... You're never going to win championships with locker room drama, locker room discord. It's just not going to happen. And it could be... And maybe it's a maturity thing, right? Maybe that changes. I mean, I think we've definitely seen Bryce mature over the years, right?
Yeah.
Good or bad. I think hustle... I don't need someone to run into walls. No. When you hit a ground ball, I need you to run it out.
Right.
Like, you're setting a tone and you're... I mean, you could even, if like big picture, if you could even make an argument saying, do you like, oh, this guy, face of a, do you want your face of a franchise to teach children to not run ground balls out?
No, he hit a ball Sunday, that hit the bag, and they showed the view from down the line, and Bryce was still standing in the batter's box. The reason I brought John Wall up, John Wall's an exceptional player, Top 10, top 15 player in all of basketball. Most other teams would kill to have him. Bryce Harper is a great, good to great player. You and I have debated that. We don't have to get into that. But most teams would, and they're going to kill to have him, the teams that can afford him. But it could be one of those things that everything else that he brings, that Bryce brings into it, and Boswell also talked about this with the image grooming, and I think... One thing that has not been talked a lot about this year is the elephant in the room that has been his contract situation. Much like in 2015, when they went into the season with five prominent guys that were in their final year, and it really weighed on those guys. Jordan Zimmerman was the biggest one, but it really weighed on those guys. Dean Desmond was another one, and both of them had... Zimmerman was okay. Ian Desmond had a down year, only got $8 million from Texas. I think that it's weighed on them. I think what's going to be... What could happen, I should say, is that if he leaves, that locker room could be a lot lighter.
Could be better.
Could be better, and it could be a lot lighter. There could be a lot less... He doesn't cause tension... Who he is causes tension. It may not be something that he can control. I don't know. I'm not in the locker room. I'm just saying.
I think it's him. I think it's the attitude. I think it's how he's groomed. I think it's just his personality.
It could be.
I think that it's what happens when you're that big of a prospect at 17, 15, 16, 17, 18. I think it's... But then again, you look back and Chris Bryant didn't turn out like that.
LeBron didn't turn out like that. I know you don't like me bringing up LeBron.
It's fine. He's a wonderful person. He does a lot for the communities.
He does. Story of the Nets season, though, has been two things. We've talked about not getting big hits. They've won 12 blowout games by over 100 runs.
So you know what's interesting about that, right? Plus minus. If you take out those wins in the blowouts, they're actually minus 33 runs on the season.
And
they're plus minus.
And yeah. It matches what their record should be. Whereas they're plus minus, they're...
I think fifth in the NL?
Yeah.
A plus 67?
Their run differential says they should be 15 or 16 games over 500.
Correct.
And should be in first place.
Yep.
And they've been shut out 14 times.
Which is... That's crazy.
It's more than they've been shut out, I think, in the two previous years combined. That's the story of their season. They can come to the party. when they're scoring, that was a Boswell quote, when they're scoring a lot of runs, they can pile on. But when you, they went through a stretch. It was the Mets series. It was the last game of the Phillies series a week and a half ago, and then the three games against the Mets. Scherzer, Roark, Gio, and Rodriguez were lights out, and they went 1-3 because they just didn't, they scored runs for Rodriguez, but that wasn't until the eighth inning.
Right.
Seventh, eighth inning, somewhere around there. It's been the story of their season. They just, who do you blame that on, though, the timely hitting? Is it on the manager or is it on the player?
You can't put that on the manager. No. But, I mean, you can't. It's a group.
It's a group effort.
Yeah. I mean, it's no one's clutch.
No.
You can't teach clutch.
Murphy was clutch.
It's been clutch for the Cubs.
He has been.
He's going to get paid handsomely next year. I think he finds a similar contract that he currently has, actually.
3 for $39, but as a first baseman.
Or DH. I'd be fine with him DHing.
I would. I don't know if he wants to DH.
Probably not. But yeah, I mean, he can play first, even though he's short.
Yeah, but he's played first in the past. It's not like a position he'd have to learn.
Right.
I'd like to spend a minute kind of showing some respect to Gio as a Nat. He's one of the most maddening pitchers I've ever watched. Certainly the most maddening pitcher I've ever rooted for. Most of his starts only lasted 5 or 6 innings. He seemed to labor through all of them. A lot of men on base. But he was really, really good at getting out of trouble. I was shocked if you look at his numbers in 7 years as a Nat. Win-loss doesn't mean much, but he was 86 and 65. Thing that shocked me, 3.62 ERA. In 213 starts, durable as can be.
Yep.
Only 3 left-handers in Major League Baseball since 2012, when Gio joined the Nats, have better numbers and also more than 200 starts. And those three are the three cream of the crop as lefties. Hamels, Sale, and Lester, minus Kershaw, who didn't make 200 starts.
Right.
So I just want to show some respect to Gio. Gio was a good Nat.
He's a great Nat. I'm going to miss his Jordan shoes. I'm going to miss his crazy Wilson gloves. That man had swag.
He had swag. He had a great personality. He was I don't know if you watched it, because he was traded, but it wasn't official, and he was sitting in the dugout.
I don't think he knew. I watched that unfold. I think he found out through his phone before the Nats told him. And if that happened, if that actually, I mean, we'll never know, right? That would sum up the entire Nats season. That if he heard the news from outside the organization before he heard it in it. Because you can tell when he went over to Strasburg, he was telling Strasburg that he got traded, I think. That conversation that they showed them having, I think, was him in the dugout informing everyone that, actually, I should be in the other dugout.
Yeah, it was a weird situation, and he was leaning on the dugout. And
why wouldn't you do it after the game? You had till midnight.
Yeah, the reason that they didn't execute the trade before the game is because Milwaukee didn't want to play with 24 guys.
That's what I'm saying is, yeah. Why not wait, like, do it before or do it after?
Why
don't
announce
make it awkward?
And Gio, I think Gio actually was glad that he got one last game in the home dugout.
Yeah.
And just the look on his face, and Masson kept showing it, and it was really sad. It was the end of an era. Chelsea Janes tweeted, she said, "This one feels like the band's breaking up."
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of them were guys that had joined later. But Gio really feels like he was there before Bryce was there. The only guy more tenured than him is Zim. And it really feels like the band's breaking up.
Yeah, 2020 will be a weird year. It's going to be weird seeing Ryan Zimmerman. Yep. Yeah. Who has basically said he's retiring. He came out and said that he won't be here. Either he won't be here, meaning he'll go somewhere else, or I think he just retires.
He said in an interview, because they were talking to him about his injuries, and he said he realized that because he got hurt when he was diving for a ball. And he's like, "I realize I'm 34. I can't do that anymore." And he's like, "I'd like to play a few more years, but that could mean maybe the Nats give me a one-year deal." The guy can hit when he's healthy.
Right. So American League DHing makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But I don't know if he'll play. I don't know if he would like playing for another team.
I don't think so. That's what I'm saying is I think he's legitimately done with baseball.
Yeah.
Which is sad. I mean, I'd like to see. He deserves a World Series.
Yeah.
For
he does.
Basically 05 to 10 for putting up with the Nationals for those years.
Listen, he ate a lot of shit for a long time. He played and witnessed a ton. He didn't play, I'm sorry. He played with and witnessed a lot of bad baseball. He played great baseball. He was their all-star, you know,
yeah,
during that time.
FP would have got playing time on those teams.
All right. I did put down here, there are two more points I want to talk about. First one is reason for optimism. A, they have young, controllable talent. The four names I put down, Soto, Robles, and Turner, are three very, very good players. Well, Soto and Turner are very, very good players. Robles is a top talent who I think will be a very good player.
Yes, and now you have possibly Turner's replacement in Luis Rivera, who apparently is skyrocketing up their top prospect list, shortstop,
right,
ahead of Kiboom.
Right.
Kiboom's got to move to sec. I mean, you're talking about, like, controllable talent. They're not all going to pan out, right?
No, but they are stocked middle infield and outfield.
Yeah. They need a catcher.
Defoe is, I mean, he's still a good utility guy, but he's showing power. Defoe's one of those guys I love watching him play. He's energetic, and he's under team control.
Yeah, he'll play. He'll be a major leaguer for a while.
Right. And they have $75 million that they're shedding off of the payroll that's not already shut off, but $75 million less than what they came into this year. So they'll have money to spend. They need, we've talked about it, two starters. One of them at least has to be a lefty. They need a catcher, and they need a second baseman. Or if Rivera or Kiboom are ready, I don't think either one of them are going to be ready next year. Or if you move, what do you think about moving Turner to second? Turner's a good shortstop.
Yeah, I don't know if you could do that. Yeah.
What about this? I thought about this. If
I know where you're going with this. I'm going to throw this out there. Let's see if we're thinking the same thing.
Okay.
I would go out, not pay Bryce, pay Manny, convince him to play third, and then move Rendon to second.
Oh, I was going with a much cheaper version of that. Move Rendon to second and give Donaldson a one-year deal.
Sure.
You could get Donaldson for $10 million, maybe.
Depending,
for
1 year. Depending on how this last month goes.
I don't think he plays.
Absolutely. He definitely plays.
You think so?
Yeah.
He hasn't played since May.
Yeah. Still an MVP.
There is reason to be optimistic. I still believe that Rizzo can put a good team together. And they've got four young arms that are up. Suero, Jimmy Cordero. They just called up Austin Williams, who's got like a 1.73 ERA in the minors this year, another reliever. So they're bringing up, and they've got Cody Glover back. So they're going to see Austin Adams, not Austin Williams, sorry. They're going to see what they can get out of the bullpen. Doolittle's entrenched as your closer next year. They actually have him for two more years, two more team options. So you're probably going to go out and get a setup man, but then can these guys be players? Solis, Grace, throwing them in as well.
Grace, yes. I think Solis, the time's passed on that
He's too inconsistent.
Yeah. Donaldson's actually playing in AAA now.
I stand corrected.
Rehab start today in AAA.
You're doing a good job as co-host slash researcher.
It's just because you're talking so much I have time to research things.
It's actually because we're recording on my phone, so you can research on your phone. And you're better at multitasking than I am.
It's just because I'm not paying attention to you when you're talking.
Final thing I'm going to bring up. Thanks for that. Final thing I'm going to bring up. The Soto versus Acuna, who deserves the NL Rookie of the Year. You and I are in agreement on this, but I'm going to tell the audience the numbers. Soto has a 2.3 WAR, 303 batting average, 417 on base, which is amazing. 520 slugging. He's got a 937 OPS. 16 home runs, 53 RBIs in 92 games. Acuna has played 85 games, 296 average, so he's 7 points lower. The big discrepancy, 361 on base. It's 50, is that right? 56 below what Soto is. That's a big difference. But a 577 slugging. He's got a 57 points higher in slugging. They have pretty much identical OPSs. 937 for Soto, 938 for Acuna. Big difference. Soto only has 2 stolen bases. Acuna has 11. Soto's 16 home runs. Acuna has 23. They're both around 50 RBIs. The biggest difference that you and I both talked about, Acuna, 8 defensive runs saved above average, and Soto is at -5. To me, it's not a competition. Acuna is the Rookie of the Year.
Yes. And as funny as it sounds, it's actually defense is what wins him that award.
Defense and stolen bases and power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because really, if you look at it, I mean, they're both great players. They are. You couldn't go wrong with either one. It's not a knock on Soto that he's not going to win the Rookie of the Year. Acuña's having a phenomenal year. And Acuña would be running away from it, running away with it if he didn't get hurt in Boston. But you're right. Defense and power are the two big ones. Acuña is... Soto is a below-average left fielder. He's not there. He didn't get called up for defense. He wasn't ready to be a major leaguer defensively. He got called up because the guy rakes, and he rakes constantly. But it's not a competition.
No, not at all.
So we'll get to our final thoughts. You want to go for it? Do you have anything to
do? I do, actually.
Yeah, why don't you lead off?
I'm going to science knowledge you on this one.
Oh, boy.
So I started thinking about moving parts and Bryce Harper's swing and things you learn as a child when you're learning how to play baseball.
Okay.
There are so many things, and this speaks to how great of a talent he is. There are so many things in his swing that someone would be like, don't ever do that again. Immediately fix that. And I really don't like how you do that. Obviously, and I think he's done a better job, but it's still broken, is how much his head moves, which is what phenomenal hand-eye coordination he must have to be able to move his head that much. But you know another thing that kills me? It just burns my eyes, in the words of Sean Ricks, who uses that quote all the time. His elbow is jacked up. So in order for him to swing, it has to go back down and get into hitting position. And there are all those batting coaches that will sit there and tell you, that's fine, I don't care how you start as long as you get in this position, right? But, like, it seems like he's fighting himself to try and hit a ball. And then you look at someone who, like, Soto, who's just simple, right? Someone, like, he should be so much better than he actually is. He has generational power to all fields. I mean, was a legitimate five-tool player when he came up and was a catcher, had to learn how to play outfield. Now I would say defense is below average, still has a great arm. Speed, yes, but doesn't use it. So, I mean, what's the point? Like, you can get high grades on that. His power is still plus power. Average, hitting for contact is probably below average at this point.
But he gets on base.
But he gets, yeah. I mean, he's got a pretty good eye. He should be so much. He's just such a disappointment to me. And maybe it's because the expectations are so high. Like you've said, good major leaguer. He will have a good major league career. But the expectations and what has been built of Bryce Harper is a myth, not the actual person. And maybe he goes on to the Dodgers, to the Yankees, to the Phillies, to the Braves, and has that great career. Because that would be DC sports in a nutshell. I mean, that would be like, ha-ha. Braves go on and win, like, you know, 5 World Series with Bryce Harper in right field or left field because you're not going to move Markakis. I just, like...
Or like when Kirk Cousins is going to lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl.
That's not going to happen. Kirk. Whatever. Let's not even... I'm not even going to go off on that tangent.
Sorry.
But, I mean, like... either he doesn't listen or people are afraid to tell him. Or maybe the third option is his dad's in his ear, and he is one of those kids that, like, your dad is just the only person that you trust. I think if I were to ever have a child, you know, it would be like, I would want to be so removed from coaching and from helping them out that I was not a factor. I want, like, just like my dad did, you know, go down the right field line, smoke a cigar, and just, you know, whatever.
My dad did the same thing, minus,
like,
the cigar.
Stay away from the parents.
Hated,
like, just,
being around parents.
Yeah. I not be a helicopter parent. Listen to them. They know what they're doing. And if, you know, if they say something stupid, be like, yeah, you know, agree with it. But, you know, hey, present it in a way where it's more of like, well, this is the way someone else does it. I don't know if it's right or wrong. And maybe this is it. Maybe Bryce's dad is like, this is the way you hit. Everyone else is an idiot. I know better than everyone else. It has to be the environment that he was raised. Like, why is he the way that he is?
Well, Josh, let's put him on the couch.
That's where I'm going. What a disappointment. I know that bothers you.
No, it doesn't. It's funny. That will tie into what I'm going to talk about, but I want to address what you said first. A couple of things. One, when he was in a slump during his tenure with the Nationals, they would bring his dad in. And his dad is his hitting coach, which I think is a problem. It's because his dad's not a never was a major leaguer. I mean, I agree with you. And the one thing, the other thing you talk about maddening, or what does Rick say? Hurts his eyes?
Yeah, burns his eyes.
Burns his eyes. It looks like Bryce steps in the bucket a lot.
Yeah.
That he's falling out of the batter's box. He steps in the bucket. When he's on time, he goes through the pitch. Takes it, and he's great when he's going to left center field. But it is maddening when it looks like he swings and it looks like all of his weight is falling into the Nats dugout.
Correct.
I can't stand that.
You take those swings and then you have FP going, oh, there's a solid swing. When he rolled over and is good enough and strong enough that he hit a ball off the end of the bat that's a soft line drive that's a base hit. But you can tell on a ball middle or middle away, that ball should be hammered and he has more than enough strength to hit it 400 feet out to left center. Instead, he's almost rolling over and he's lucky he's not breaking bats. I mean, it's just, be better. You're supposed to be better.
He is supposed to be better. And I also agree, our dads were very similar in that. My dad would go down, didn't want to be around the parents, he'd go down to baseline. My favorite story is that the one no-hitter I threw in high school, my dad showed up two outs into the game and wasn't near anybody. So at the end of the game, when everybody mobbed me, he was like, what the hell just happened? And I said, Dad, I threw a no-hitter. He goes, cool, I'll see you at home. Because we were at Wakefield, you know. And but no, I would be the same way. I would be better teaching my kid how to throw pitches, you know, two-seamer, four-seamer. I don't, you know, the whole debate about when I should teach him how to throw a curveball. They do say a fastball is actually harder on your elbow than a curveball is. My splitter, which was my signature pitch, I would teach him how to do that. But when he got to a point where the coaches knew more, I'd be like, you listen to them.
Which would probably be what, like 7 or 8?
I was thinking T-ball.
Okay.
Yeah, 5, 6, which he's almost there. I mean, my son's 3.5. But yeah, I agree with you. He should have been better. And that goes into what I was going to talk about, is that this is the end of the first major era, positive major era in Nationals history. 2012 to 2000, well, you could really say 2011 when Jason Worth got here. That was the first year that they started to turn it around. Because in that June, they actually were at 500 in June, which was the first time they had been 500 that deep in the season since their first season. And that's when Riggleman got up and quit. And then went to, what was that bar down in Maryland? But it's sad. It was a great 7-plus years. It was. I made sure that I watched baseball every night. For a Nationals fan, Josh is shaking his head, so I'm going to answer his remark to me. We grew up with the Nationals, 05 to 11. They were a laughingstock. Bad baseball.
It was bad baseball.
And it made this last 7-plus years enjoyable. Maddening in the postseason, but the 6 months of regular season baseball was a lot of fun to watch. I'm sad to see it go. I'm sad to see staples like Gio go. I was sad to see Jason Worth go, even though it was his time to go. You know, I'm sad to see these guys go. And it's going to be a completely different roster next year. Your core next year is going to be Trey, Soto, Rendon, Zimmerman. And that's it. Harper's probably gone. I think it makes smart baseball sense for him to go. And it's just, for me, it's a sad thing. It's a thing that I'm sad to see go. I'm excited for the future. I said last week that they are less likely, I think, in the next 7 years to win a World Series than they were this past 7. But it doesn't mean that they're not going to do it. I think they would have said that about your beloved Capitals, that during quote-unquote Ovi's prime, they had a better chance of winning the Stanley Cup, and then they won it as he's on his prime is starting to go slightly down, even though he's still one of the best players in all of hockey.
I will stand by the fact that I think that once Bryce goes, they're much better place to win a World Series.
You think they're going to take off?
Yeah.
They're going to need a new manager.
But I just think once you get that ego out of the dugout, I think that you can, even if it was Davey, which I hope it's not, I think he could at least start to rebuild trust amongst his players.
He's going to need, because right now he has Bryce's trust. I don't know if he has Max Scherzer's trust.
I bet you he has Bryce. Everybody's coddling Bryce Harper. That's the problem, is you have 24 other guys who play on a team. It's not the Nationals. It's the Nationals and Bryce Harper. That's where they're at right now. That's why they're not winning.
That was a problem, too, with RG3. Not to bring him up, but that was a problem, too. There was a different set of rules for him. He was able to go into Mike Shanahan's office and go, I'm not running the read option anymore. And Dan Snyder went, sounds good, buddy. But if, I mean, name any a number of players. Clinton Portis, that was a problem with the Redskins for a long time. Clinton Portis had Dan Snyder's ear. When players get preferential treatment, it kills chemistry. And it might not be, directive might not be coming from the manager. It might be coming from ownership.
Or it could be coming from Rizzo.
It could be. We'll talk about whether or not Bryce stays, but you don't think he will. I don't think you can dedicate, and we're going to talk a lot about this, but I don't think you can dedicate 20-25% of your payroll to one guy, especially that one guy.
No, I think if you've said this before, and I actually agree with it. If you want to make money and keep non-baseball fans coming to Nats Park, go ahead and sign him. But I think you're signing away any chance you have to win a World Series.
It makes business sense. It might not make baseball sense. And I did ask you a question. It's the last thing we'll talk about. I asked you a question the other day. I don't even know if we figured it out. Oh, we did figure it out. The last MVP to actually win a World Series was Chris Bryant, right?
Yep.
But before that...
Yeah, I can't even remember who the
when
last
When you have the best player in baseball, who's Mike Trout, hasn't won a World Series. Hasn't even won a playoff series. And the best player in American League prior to 2017 was arguably Altuve. And he was nothing until last year, and that was when the talent... And really, who knows if they would have gotten there without Justin Verlander.
Correct. So. Kate Upton saved his career.
God bless Kate Upton. Ooh, episode title.
The good news is, just to let everyone know, DC United did win yesterday. 3-1 over Atlanta United.
After losing two straight, right?
Yep, Wayne Rooney with a penalty kick. I think that's what the P next to his goal means. I don't know soccer or football, as the rest of the world calls it.
Football.
It appears that they do not play again until next Saturday at 4:55 p.m., what a weird start time.
Where is it going to be?
Here?
Road trip?
Road trip to D.C.?
To D.C.
I like it. That's what I call a Monday.
There you go. So thank you guys for listening. Remember, follow us on Twitter, ITS, About Time, DC1. Again, it's About Time, DC1 on Twitter. And we will talk to you guys next week. Thank you again for listening. Josh, have a good week, man.
You as well.